Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
We are jammed up wall to wall with the biggest names in the sport, and we start right off the top. I am joined by a tight end for the San Francisco 49ers, a Pro Bowler. He set an NFL record for most receiving yards by a tight end this year with 1,377. He set the team record for most receptions by a tight end with 88. He led the NFL in yards after the catch. Recipient of the 2018 Bill Walsh Award, he was the 146th pick in 2017 out of Iowa, and he is appearing courtesy of Skittles. He already told me he gets to keep the backpack. George Kittle. Oh, yeah. George, no, what's going on? Show me that thing.
Yeah, I got to keep the backpack. That's what I'm pumped about.
I'll give you $20 for that thing right now.
No chance.
$30, dude. $50 right now.
I'll talk to the reps. They can get you one, man.
All right,
I'm working for this. Are you kidding me?
That is the best.
Yeah, no. I'm working with Skittles, you know, like their whole thing, which
bro,
is really
bro,
fun.
Bro, you're going to hijack my interview right now?
Yeah, I was going
with
to.
That pitch?
I was going to.
I'll tell you what, how about this? I promise you we will get to it, and I will afford you the respect that you and the product deserves.
I love it.
All right, got you, man.
I respect
it. And I know why you would do that, though, man, because some guys aren't cool like me.
I'm on a roll.
Don't get there.
I'm on a roll, baby.
You are on a roll, man. All right, so yeah, this season was absolutely incredible. But before we talk about that, what was more exciting to you at the Pro Bowl? Going to Universal Studios or seeing your old man get his face painted?
Oh, that was, hey, look. The best part about that, we had the VIP tour with Disney. And so we're going through like Pandora, whatever it, what it's called, doing the Pandora ride. Because like I've had like 10 guys say it's a life-changing ride.
Was it?
It was incredible. You ride like a motorcycle through the, it's outrageous. I don't want to give it away. You should go see it for yourself. But so then walking out.
It was a game changer, a life changer.
It was the best ride I've been on.
Okay.
It was incredible. But then my dad's like, hey, I'm going to get it face paint. It's like, I really want to do it. My dad just turned 60, and he's out there getting face paint. And I was that was definitely better than the Universal thing.
So what got into him? I mean, is that the way he rolls typically, or did he just kind of snap when he got there?
He's a very outgoing dude just like me. Yeah, no, he likes to have fun with it. He didn't even take it off. Like, he had it on the next morning, too.
Dude, is it still on right now?
It might be, honestly. I don't know.
How do you know, man?
I don't know.
It'd be great, too, if he got, like, a backpack. So, like, father and son matching backpacks, we should hook him up.
Can we work on that?
George Kittle, my guest. Now, before we talk about the season itself, I got to know, man. I mean, it was a historic season. Going into the season, what kind of expectations did you have for yourself? Did you know you had a record-setting year in you?
You know, for some reason, I'm not really a big guy on individual like you know goals like that. I'm all about the team stuff. Like, I've always said, like, hey, I want to win, whether it's 10 games, 12 games, 14 games, like whatever it is. Like, that's my goal. I want to win games. As long as I play well, I don't care. Like, if I go out, I have zero catches. It's okay with me as long as I have a good game and the team wins. Like that's what I care about. But I didn't go into the year thinking, hey, I'm going to go for Gronk's record. That was not my first goal. It just kind of came with, you know, playing the game and, you know, playing the game that I loved, I've always played.
George Kittle, my guess, getting the record is one thing. How you got that record, though, is something totally different. Final game of the year, you had 149 receiving yards, and it pushed you over the top for the single-season record by a tight end. Now, Travis Kelce broke the previous record that same day, but his game ended before yours. Were you paying attention to what he did and how much you needed to get that record? I know you're not about the record, but...
No, yes and no. So, I didn't really even knew I had a shot for the record until like it was like 3 games left in the year, and I was like, hey, if I average like close to 100 yards a game, I might be able to do this. And so going to the last game, I was at the fourth quarter. My tight end goes, hey, you need 50 yards. Kelce broke the record. You need 50 yards, though, to break him. I was like, well, you know, let's do it. And you know, just the fact that, you know, Coach Shanahan gave me the opportunity to do that, it was pretty special.
I mean, it was the coach. I'll get into that. But what about the defense? The defense they had to get the ball back for you to have that chance. What did it mean to you the defense manned up the way it did to provide you that opportunity?
No, the best part was, we called a timeout. It's fourth down. And Coach Shanahan goes in the defense tunnel and says, hey, look, if you guys make this stop, we're going to get killed at the record. And so, I mean, my love for Coach Shanahan, it's a lot. And that you know, hits me home. But our free safety, Exum, just blitzed. Was not called, nothing. He just said, screw it, I'm going to go through, makes the play, gives me the shot. And so that was incredible.
So then Shanahan, he actually said to you, you've got two plays to break the record. You needed 9. You got 6 on first down. Then on the second down, Nick Mullins hit you in the flat. You made a defender miss. You run 43 yards for the TD. What do you remember about that play?
The best part about that play was, so my tight coach told me on the side, he said, hey, this is the play, because they were going to put me in a different position just because it looked better for, you know, for the route. And we called it wrong, so I was on the wrong side of the formation. So as the play clock's winding down, me and Juszczyk changed sides, and then the wide receiver came down, and I don't know if he was supposed to motion or not, but then he was supposed to run a flat. He ran a stick, so we ran double stick from a stack formation.
Wow.
And somehow it worked out just perfectly.
It worked out great. In fact, your teammate Richard Sherman said, that this is a quote now, that last play was a microcosm of who he is as a player and a person. It's a five-yard gain for the record. He takes whatever it was, 40 yards, scores a TD. He just never stops playing. Look, I would imagine you want the respect of everybody in that locker room, but to get it from a guy like that, a vet like that, for that guy to say that, what's that mean to you?
Special. I mean, any time that you can earn the respect and the, you know, the from your peers, there's not much better than that. And a guy like Richard Sherman, who's been around fantastic players, you know, year in and year out, I mean, himself is one of the greats. To get that from him is special.
One more quote. Now, George Kittle, my guest. This will make sense now that people are listening or watching when I read this. Sherman said, "I can never catch him where he's like, man, I don't want to be bothered today. He's always got a smile. He's always kooky. You're just like, bro, one of these days I'm going to catch you when you don't want to talk, but I haven't found that day yet." End of quote. I got to know, man, where does all the positivity come from?
I get paid to play football. Are you kidding me? Like, it's
a good answer, bro.
Are you kidding me? Like, it's been a dream of mine since I was like 5 years old. I want to play football my entire life as long as I possibly can. And the fact that I get an opportunity to do it at the highest level possible, and I do it pretty well. There's not much more. I mean, and think about it, I live in California. I wake up every day, and we were 4-12. I wake up every day during what, like a 6-game skid. It is 65 degrees, 75 degrees, and sunny every single day. I have nothing to be sad about.
Dude,
all I want to do is win.
Get your ass down to Southern California, and you'll wake up every day. It'll be 75 to 80.
I agree, but I'm just saying, like, it's blue skies. Like, there's nothing in my life that is depressing. Like, and we can always improve on our record. And that's what I'm looking forward to.
George Kittle joining me. All right, before we get to the Skittles, we're going to get there in 1 second. A few weeks back, man, your social game got really interesting.
Ooh.
When you had a tweet that just said, "Sup, at AB84. A lot of 49er fans were all hyped on that. They thought maybe you were trying to recruit him to San Francisco. Is that what you were angling for? Was that the plan?
You know what? Jimmy G dared me that I wouldn't do it. And so I said, you know what? Yeah, okay, I will do it. And that's all it was. You know, AB is a fantastic player. Anything that happens, you know, with players in the offseason, that's on, you know, Coach Shanahan and Mr. Lynch. And, you know, whatever decisions they make, I'm standing behind them.
Dude, is that what it was? He dared you that you wouldn't do it?
Yeah.
And you did it? I dare you that you won't give me $10,000 right now.
No chance. You're not Jimmy G, man.
I had to try. No, I'm not, dude. Not even close.
You don't got his looks, man.
I don't got any of his stuff, man. I don't got his look. I don't got his size. I don't got his game. I don't have his check. I wasn't photographed with a porn star. You're right. I'm not. I'm none of that, bro. What do you got going with Skittles, man? It's
okay.
An amazing candy. Talk to me.
Okay. Well, thank you. Now I get to talk a little bit.
Do your thing, man.
All right, so the Skittles. First off, you can't spell Skittles without Kittle. I've been plugging this.
Dude, that's incredible.
I've been plugging this since I was like 5 years old. Like, my junior year, the back of my cleats said "Taste the Rainbow." Like, I've been planning this for a while.
You set it up, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. So I've been ready for this. But the whole thing they're doing, instead of a commercial for the game Sunday, they're doing a Broadway musical in New York City. So it's a Broadway musical live. It's Skittles commercial, the Broadway musical. You can get your tickets on SkittlesMusical.com. And have you seen Dexter, the TV show?
Yes.
Michael C. Hall is the main guy in the, yep, in the Broadway musical. So I mean, that's going to be incredible. He's singing, he's acting, there's 16 other people doing it. But you can only see it if you go to the show. They're not going to air it. That's what's so interesting about it. So there's like a mystique behind it. It's kind of like, well, if I don't go to the show, I'll never be able to see what happens. So I can't even go to the show, which is upsetting.
Why?
I have stuff going on. And I don't have a plane ticket to New York City.
Huh.
But, I mean, if you want to go, I could probably find you tickets.
Thanks, bro. I bet if you wanted to go, they could probably find you tickets.
I probably could, but I had a lot of stuff
going on. You got stuff going on.
I got a lot of stuff going on.
Like what, man? What's more important than that? Nothing.
Super Bowl Sunday, baby.
That's important. All right. Continue with your pitch. Or are you good?
Hey, I mean, I could keep talking about Skittles forever, baby, but yeah, I did what
too.
I was supposed to do.
All right, good job. Well done. What are you doing on Super Bowl Sunday? If you're not playing in the game, you know, some guys get really weird about that. I'm not playing. I'm not watching. I'm not playing. I'm going to get my ass out of town. Or others are like, hey, man, it is Super Bowl Sunday. It's all right.
Yeah,
how are
you
approaching it?
I'm going to watch it. I mean, for me, I got a lot of former teammates playing in this game, Iowa guys. My cousin plays for the Rams, practice squad tight end, and then one of my best friends plays practice squad offensive line for the Patriots, and they're both groomsmen of mine for my wedding coming up. So I can't really pick a team to win either because I'm kind of on both sides. So I'm just looking forward to a great game.
Where are you getting married?
You got to ask my fiance that. I don't even know that yet.
Come on, bro.
She wants Italy, man.
Oh, yeah, dude. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it's going to be
a
fun one.
Do you know?
No idea.
If you get around to discussing it with her, you don't know?
I have no clue.
Do you know when the wedding date is?
2020. That's all I know.
2020.
I'm giving you a lot of details.
Yeah, I could tell, dude. Way to give it up, man. You're an open book, bro. I can't even stop you from talking.
No.
Do you know where the honeymoon is?
Somewhere that has like those, you know, those houses up over the water, like in the Fiji,
Bora Bora.
I've always wanted to do that.
It's awesome.
I've always wanted to do that.
You will love that, man. You jump out the back of the house.
I know, and then you just get right back in. That's fine.
That's good, man.
I've never done that. I've actually never left the country, so I'm looking forward to it.
It's
going to
be good, man. You earned it. You had an amazing year. George, that's how you start off a Thursday on Radio Row, man. Not only lived up to all the hype, smashed it. Great to see you.
Thank you so much.
And congrats on keeping that backpack, man. That's a good look.
I'm going to hold on to that, baby.
You should, dude.
Yeah.
You should. All right. Talk to you soon, man.
Hey, thank you so much.
George Kittle had the single greatest year of tight ends ever had in that league, and there have been some really good tight ends in the NFL. And he's had the best historic marks.
When it comes to safety, there is nothing more important than your vehicle's brakes. Trust the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts to help you choose the brakes that aren't exact fit for your car. Brands that you trust like Brake Best, Brake Best Select, and Wagner ThermoQuiet. O'Reilly Auto Parts has the brake parts and accessories you need at guaranteed low prices. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day.
The Super Bowl today starts at 2 p.m. Eastern, Sunday on CBS. Nate Burleson. Nate, what's up? How are you?
I'm chilling, man. I'm trying to put this work in like you. I've been watching you do it for so long. You never rest, so neither will I.
Well, bro, you're not resting. Let me lay that out really quickly. I mean, you're doing Good Morning Football. You've done Tops on CBS Sports Network. You interviewed both head coaches on opening night.
Yeah.
You're prepping for the biggest pregame show of the year, the NFL Today on Sunday. How is your week going, and how do you approach it? What's your process?
You know, it's amazing that I'm in this situation. And, you know, after 11 years, never sniffed the Super Bowl. Made it to the playoffs, had a push. I was a couple games away from the big game one year. But I remember retiring and thinking to myself, I'll never have a chance to be part of a Super Bowl. And it was quite depressing because I had to come to grips that the football version of me, it's over. And then so many years later, after putting in work on the TV side, working for CBS, getting that opportunity, now I'm part of the big game. So in my mind, I get to kind of make believe that all this is for me. Like, I'm getting ready to play in the biggest game of my life, and I really am. But the week has been great. I'm trying not to peak too early. There's so many things that you can do. There's a lot of opportunities to make a little money on the side, and then there's parties every night, and you got calls from everybody telling you to show up at different places. But I need to calm down and realize that I'm here for a specific reason, and I got to represent CBS on Sunday. 170-plus million people watching. That's the most important part of my week.
What's that like, Nate? I mean, do you feel like you've played in some really, really big games. Yeah. You know what it's like to come through the tunnel. I would never say that any of this is like that. But when you come through that proverbial TV tunnel on Sunday, how do you think you're going to feel?
I'm going to feel like I'm playing in the game. You know, it's not the same as far as preparing for the game. But, you know, the work that I've put in since 2014 retiring, I do feel like that has been my preseason, the short nights and the early mornings. Doing 6 days a week, working for Good Morning Football and NFL Today. There's times this year where I worked for CBS, NFL Network, and Fox. I went 21 days straight, no days off. I did the in-game color commentating. I did the NFL Today and, of course, Good Morning Football. But it's all worth it, though. Like, I wouldn't complain one bit. Even my wife at times said, baby, you're working too much. And I had to look back at her and tell her I'm working for a reason. And the Super Bowl is that reason.
You know, it's like you want that life balance. It's so important, especially you want to get your family there, your wife, your kids. But in our business, it's kind of natural to say there is no such thing as working too much.
Right.
Because you and I know differently.
Yeah.
Somebody's coming for it. This is the world, man.
Yeah.
Somebody wants what you have. Somebody wants what I have. We have to work.
You know more than anybody. I mean, you work and you put your product in front of people, and you have to remind them constantly. And unfortunately, we're in a world where it's fast food information, and people will digest what you're saying, but they want the next meal. They want the next thing said to them. And if you're not saying it, then their eyes are going to go somewhere
else.
And that's exactly why, you know, I tell you all the time when we talk off camera is that you are a true representation of what hard work means. And, you know, watching you for so long as a player and now TV personality, when I have guys like you as big brothers and mentors in this business, I mean, there's no way that I could take a seat and take rest.
No, I appreciate that, Nate. And what I've always said about you, and I say this about all athletes, that when you get into this business, it may not be as exciting as the game itself, but you have to treat it like the game itself. This is not a victory lap.
Right.
This is not something that is owed to you. You have to earn this every single day.
Yeah.
And athletes like you that have done as well off the field as on it understand that, man. You have to bring the same intensity.
Yep.
All right, Nate Burleson, my guest. What about the matchup itself? Earlier this season, the knock on the Patriot receivers were they had a hard time getting separation. When you watch them right now, what do you see?
I see them getting separation. It's a combination of the pure athleticism, but then it's also the play calling. You know, I feel like Bill Belichick, Josh McDaniels do such a great job of bringing the variety each game. You know, one game it could be Julian Edelman leading the way, and he's going to be fantastic in the postseason, as we all know. And the next game it could be Gronk, who we thought was falling apart at one point, you know, going out there taking hits and the shrapnel falling off of his elbow brace. And then the next game is James White catching 15 rocks. And that's why these guys are so successful, because it's almost like they set you up for tendencies just for you to fall for them. You know, I played on teams where they're very traditional. The tendencies that we go into the game with are tendencies that will get us exposed. But not the Patriots. The tendencies that they go into the game with were tendencies that they purposely go into the game with, just so you can fall for the okey-doke and they can mix up how they run certain plays and put guys in certain positions. I don't think there's any other team in the entire NFL that has a variety of guys that can play different positions. I played on teams where the guy next to me knows only his job and cannot be moved around on the field. Patriots running backs, they can play every running back position. Gronk can play on the left side, inside, outside. Julian Edelman, left side, inside, outside. And that's what makes this team difficult. So when it comes to separation, it's not just the pass catchers and what they do when they're running routes. It's also the play calling that gives an advantage.
We're talking to Nate Burleson. All right, Nate, what about the Rams? You know, they've got this high-flying offense, but when you look at that offense, how much of it is about that running game?
Everything.
Right.
Everything starts with the running game and it finishes with the running game. You know, let's give credit to C.J. Anderson, who came off the couch, and he even poked a little fun at his weight. I think after one of the big games, he said, "I'm just a fat boy running." Hey, well, the fat boy got some quick feet.
Fatback.
And he's out here doing his thing. But, you know, when you look at the plays, if you want to pay attention to something while you're watching this game at home, pay attention to how everything kind of hinges off the play action. Even if it's a small, subtle fake, Jared Goff is going to dip his hand into the belly of Todd Gurley or C.J. Anderson, and then he's going to pop up and keep his eyes upfield. Also pay attention to the condensed formations. They will show the same formation five times, and all that formation, crossing routes by the wide receivers, post corners by the wide receivers, and then a screen play to Todd Gurley on the left side of the field. I mean, that's why this team is so successful. But it all starts with the running game, like you said.
All right, so what about that? If they take away the running game, if they take away Gurley, if they can shut down the Rams' running game and they make Jared Goff beat them, can Goff do it?
Yeah, he proved that he can play in big moments when he went out there and beat Drew Brees. You know, people want to point to the no call or the missed call. I don't fall for that. Saints were up 13, put him away. In the fourth quarter, late in the game, Sean Payton decides to throw the ball to Michael Thomas. He stops the clock, give Jared Goff a minute plus to go down there and tie up the game. And then after the actual no call, the Saints, they get the ball in overtime. They don't finish it off. Jared Goff had some key throws in that game that showed me that he's ready for the moment. And I get it. It's Tom Brady. You're looking across that field, and it's the GOAT. You're like, wait a minute. Is that Tom over there? Like, I remember playing against Tom, and I wasn't on defense, and I was shook. He glanced one time at the sideline and did one of those let's goes, and I was like, talking to me?
Yeah, right.
That's the type of intensity he brings to the table. But if they do stop the run game, yes, Jared Goff is going to have to step up. And if there's moments in this game where he has a lull or he doesn't fulfill expectations as a passer, that defense is going to have to get to Tom. That's where it's going to be one in the trenches. I feel like the pocket that the Patriots present, if it's collapsed by Ndamukong Suh and Aaron Donald, Rams win the game. If the pocket that the Patriots present for Tom Brady, if it remains clean, like they have been doing the postseason, Tom Brady has not been sacked.
Dude, he hasn't been touched.
Hasn't been touched. If he's not touched in this game, Patriots continue the dynasty, they win.
It's so well said. So who do you think wins that battle in the trenches? How do you think that plays out?
I feel like Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh are going to have a big game. Like, what are you going to do? It's almost pick your poison. You know, some would say statistically, Ndamukong Suh didn't have a big year, but he's more of a destructicon. He helps guys around him dominate. Aaron Donald is a beast. You slide protection to him, you leave Sue single coverage, he's going to expose you. If you want to dedicate multiple guys to Sue because he's been great in this postseason, Aaron Donald one-on-one coverage, I'm taking him 10 times out of 10. I'm taking Aaron Donald on a double team 8 times out of 10. I've seen him beat a triple team this year. So for me, that place where Tom Brady loves to step up in the pocket. Tom Brady isn't going to back up, roll out, and take off with his legs. Tom Brady is the great of the subtle movement, stepping up and climbing up into that middle space. That middle space, that right there is real estate that Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh have to dominate. If they don't, then the Patriots win.
Yeah, maybe it's just me, but when you can get it out in about 1 second flat every single
time.
You don't need to roll out and use your legs.
That's true.
Which don't work anyway, but you don't need to.
You don't need to. He's never been a threat to run, but still one of the greatest passers we've ever seen.
Hey, Nate, really quickly, with such good analysis, but what about Aaron Donald? I mean, how do you explain a guy that size being that dominant? Never mind, how do you explain any guy being that dominant right now, but a guy that size being that dominant?
It's crazy because he's not that tall.
No.
I saw him the other day, and I swear that I was a little bit taller than him.
Right.
And I'm 6 foot and some change. And once I saw a picture of him with his shirt off, it all made sense. You know, I don't spend too much time looking at guys with their shirt off, but I remember seeing a picture of him in the locker room flexing, and I'm like, damn, this dude's cut. He's built like
a bleep house.
That's a brick bleep house. That's exactly what it is.
Right.
One of those guys from the World's Strongest Man competition. His name should be Magnuson Vermagnuson Vermagnuson. But for me, that's why he's so
good. And they're doing 40s with refrigerators on their back.
That's exactly what it is. But for me, it's the ability to use his feet at the line of scrimmage. He can move like a wide receiver. I guarantee he's going to do a move where he puts 2 feet in the ground, and then he shoves a hand into somebody's chest, and then he swims over to the top. That's one of his favorite moves. He'll do that move, catch you off balance. The next time offensive lineman, he's on his heels. When you're on your heels, he'll take these 2 hands and bench press you into the lap of the quarterback. Once you fall for that one, you're like, all right, I got to steady myself because that bench press threw me back. That's when he speed rushes you. He has the variety of rushes that I don't think we see often. He might be the best in the game. So for people that look at him, yeah, being in the interior, getting 20 and a half sacks, that's different. But when he gets on that rhythm where he's just rotating his variety of mixing, getting to the quarterback, his rushes, nobody can stop him.
Well, that's really interesting. Not just a matter of Brady getting into his rhythm. If Donald gets into his rhythm and you don't disrupt him,
that's
dangerous. About 30 seconds, Dane. I really appreciate you.
Yeah.
Did you or did you not say on Good Morning Football that Donald's going to score a touchdown in this game?
I did. I said that what's going to be trending is ADTD, Aaron Donald for a touchdown. He picked up a fumble this year, and he looked so damn fast. I was like, golly, they got to get this dude the ball on offense. Wouldn't it be great if Sean McVay has his version of the Philly special and Aaron Donald comes trotting in? Maybe they hand it off to him or he does a dump-off pass. I want that to happen so bad. My man's athletic enough. Might as well give him the rock.
If anybody would, Sean McVay would, for sure.
Yeah.
Nate Burleson, he is all over this town, on every TV channel in the world. But don't forget, the NFL on CBS Super Bowl today starts at 2 p.m. Eastern. Nate, I mean this in all sincerity, man. That is such a good segment because I know you've already done your show. I know you've already put in the full day. So to show up like that, man, could not appreciate it.
My guy.
Or respect it anymore.
Appreciate you, brother.
So much, Nate. Great job. Nate Burleson, you want to look for him on Sunday for sure. And also on Good Morning Football, Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Eastern. How many big plays have you missed because you were stuck babysitting the grub on the grill? There is a very easy solution. Masterbuilt Smokers. Let a Masterbuilt Smoker simplify your game day experience with the perfect smoked foods. That way you spend more time with your family and friends and you can enjoy the big game. They have the perfect smoker for everybody with options featuring the ease of electric, traditional charcoal, or the convenience of propane. Let Masterbuilt Smokers do all the work and you take all the credit. Masterbuilt Smokers are available at Home Depot, Lowe's, Sam's Club, Academy, Bass Pro, and Cabela's. And for more information, recipe, and tips, simply go to Masterbuilt.com. That's Masterbuilt.com.
I've been saying this. One of my favorite things about The Row is not only do you have access, face-to-face access that you normally can't get, but also access with old friends and you get to run them down. And I consider this guy that. 13 years with the Chicago Bears, a 5-time All-Pro, an 8-time Pro Bowler, the 2005 Defensive Player of the Year. He's a member of the 2000s All-Decade Team, a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, class of 2018, and working with United Airlines and Special Olympics. Brian Urlacher is my guest. Brian, so good to see you, man. How are you?
Good to be back on. It's been a while.
How's life treating you?
Things are good, man. Can't complain. A lot less stressful this year being around the Super Bowl than last year. Last year I was not sure if I was going to get into the Hall of Fame or not, so this is much more fun than having to worry about that.
You know, I was going to get to that a little bit later on, but since you brought that up, well, no, it's all right, man. I'm good like that. I can just kind of go with it.
I know you can.
Like, so what was that like? The days leading up to it, not knowing what was going to happen, how stressful was that and what was that like?
I mean, it was stressful because you just don't know which way they're going to lean in that room. You know, you don't know, and there's so many good players on that finalist list. You know, look at the guys. A lot of guys that are a finalist this year were finalists last year as well. So it's just so hard to know which way they're leaning. You know, we didn't win a Super Bowl, so that I felt like that was working against me. But, man, once we got that knock on Saturday night, all that went away. Just
What's that moment like when you get that knock? What's that moment like?
So I think it's more relief than anything for me. You know, you never know, you expect to get in there, but I thought maybe eventually I might get in, but you never think first ballot, or I didn't at least, but it was just relief and just jubilation. My family was excited. I was excited. It was great.
Brian Urlacher is a Hall of Famer. He joins me on Radio Row. You know, you're somebody who always wanted to be known as a good teammate. That was the most important thing for you. You want to be a good teammate. So what's it like when you're told that not only are you a good teammate, you're one of the greatest players to ever play in that league? How did that feel?
Well, it's an honor. You know, my goal wasn't to make it to the Hall of Fame. When I played, I just love football. I want to be out there. It was a great job to have. I love going to work with my teammates every day. But, yeah, to have both those things, I look up to my teammates. Like I said, I love going to work every day. It was so fun. You get to hang out with 50 of your best friends every day for 10 hours. We're in the locker room screwing around. We're messing around in practice. So those are the things I missed the most when I retired, was just that connection to those guys is gone right away.
I was going to say, it's got to be so strong, man. When you figure out the price that you guys pay physically, mentally, emotionally, the grind, the sacrifice, all the work, I don't know how you couldn't have bonds like that. They'd probably last a lifetime, but when you're no longer in it, is there any way to replace that?
Yeah.
What do you do with the rest of your life?
Yeah, you got to find things. That's why I think guys have a hard time when they retire, is they're just, everything they're used to and their routine is gone. That was hard for me because of the routine. I'm a routine guy. I love being in my routines, my breakfast, lunch, dinner, whatever it is, or workout, whatever. And football, you don't have
structure.
A choice. It's just structure, man, because as a football player, you grow up with structure, whether it's high school, college, or NFL. Your whole year is laid out for you, whether it's the season or off season. You have stuff to do, and that changed right away when I retired. And plus, all the people that I've been around the last 13 years were gone, so that all that disappeared. And just trying to adjust to something different was tough there for a while.
You know, so and all of a sudden, I would imagine there are probably some mornings we wake up like, damn, what should I do today?
Yeah, it's like, well, usually when I played, it was wake up, you gotta go to the gym, you gotta work out, and then I wake up as a I retired. I was like, well, you don't have to do anything if you don't want to. You know, once your kids go off to school or get them settled in, I don't have to do anything. So once I got past all that initial kind of shock of not having a job, I settled in pretty quick.
Brian Urlacher joining me now. Let's be straight about one thing. There are perks and there are bennies to being in the NFL. As an example, you mentioned this in your enshrinement speech. Bennies like on Thursday, Oreo donut balls day.
Oh, white balls.
What did the guys do for the white balls? How important was that?
So Jim, we would go. So Thursday, they get there like 9:30 or 10. They'd show up in the film room there. We'd go in there. I'd be the first one down there. I'd take a bathroom break and get, because the balls disappeared quick. So I go down there and get me some three or four white balls and hide them around in Dean's desk there so I can have them after I ate my lunch. But, man, the stuff that we got had access to and the food that they would make for us was unbelievable. We were lucky.
How do you eat now?
Terrible. Uh-huh. But I shouldn't say that. I eat better than I did when I played. But so I just like food, man. But now if I want to eat bad, I just work out more. So I just spend more time working out.
You look great. I was going to say you look great. I saw Carson Palmer.
Yeah.
I said, what are you doing in the gym? He was great. He's like, I'm not going in. That's what I'm doing. And made no apology for it. It was very matter of fact. I'm not doing it. I'm not going in. I don't miss it. I'm good.
I played golf with Carson 2 weeks ago here over in Orlando. But I Man, I started mountain biking, and I do that 5-6 days a week out in Arizona. Close to my house, there's some mountains, so I do that. I may lift 2 or 3 days a week. That's not my priority. I don't really care about lifting. I just love riding my bike. It's like therapy for my mind. Just get out there, pedaling for a couple hours, and go home.
Brian Urlacher is joining us right now. Something else you mentioned, some of your teammates, I guess who had the greatest influence on you, Charles Tillman was a guy that you pointed out.
Yeah.
What was it like playing with Peanut?
Fun. All those guys, Lance, Charles, any of those guys from those years of the defense, Lil Vash, Hester, it was just fun, man. We had a good time going to work, and, you know, we got our work in practice. That's for damn sure. We go out there and practice hard. And it was cool to watch Peanut kind of progress over his career from a guy, you know, second-round draft pick. And then he created the football, the Peanut punch. I mean, guys are trying to do that now. Every corner you see is trying to get that ball out, and that's because of Peanut. You look at his cost fumbles. He's up there with D linemen in career cost fumbles. It's crazy.
So when you watch that team this year, Bears. Are you feeling, like a year from right now when you and I come together, we might be talking about the Bears getting ready to play in this game?
100%. This year I thought it was going to be the year, too. You know, that defense travels. That's the thing about them. You've seen what that defense can do when they're healthy. They had like 39, 40 takeaways this year, 5 or 6 defensive touchdowns. It's good to see them back where they need to be. And, you know, Coach Nagy's got the offense rolling. They're doing a good job. Mitch is going to get better and better every season under Coach Nagy. So I think they're definitely going in the right direction.
What do you make Khalil Mack, like, from the Raiders' standpoint? Oof. Their thing is like, you know what? We can't pay a defensive player that kind of money and a quarterback. Do you feel like they're devaluing, and maybe they're not the only ones, but devaluing defensive excellence?
It showed this year. I mean, you look at what Khalil, the impact he had on the Bears, and they were good before he got there, don't get me wrong, but the impact he made on them was huge. And I mean, we got him for 2 first-round picks. And so they sent back a second-round pick to us and Khalil Mack for 2 first-round picks. You know, the first-round pick, you don't know what you're going to get. You don't know if you're going to get a generational player like Khalil.
I know what you're not going to get. You're not going to get Khalil Mack, and they had Khalil Mack.
I mean, he should be. If he keeps it up, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. You're not going to get a guy like that in the first round. I mean, he's a generational player, once every 25-year type of guy. Just I don't see it happening with a first-round pick.
So when you look at that guy and you look at Hicks and you look at that defense, does that feel like one of those great Bears defenses that upholds the standard?
For sure. You know, and look at their secondary. Eddie Jackson, Kyle Fuller, Prince Amukamara was back there doing a good job too. And their linebackers, you know, Roquan and Danny Trevathan. I could go on and on and all the guys. But they all played so well, and they play well together. It may be a little different next year for a little bit because they got a new D.C. Coach Pagano's there now. Coach Fangio left. So it may be a little different there early on. But I think once they get it figured out with the new defense, they're going to be lights out again.
You know, I want to ask you about a couple more things before you go, but I want to talk to you about the Special Olympics.
Oh,
this
yeah.
is something that you have worked very closely with for a long, long time. It's been important to you for a long, long time. Give me some thoughts and ideas. What are you doing with that?
Yeah, so we United. I'm here on behalf of United Airlines. They partnered up with Special Olympics. They're one of the big sponsors for Special Olympics. On the 50th anniversary in Chicago last year in Chicago, Special Olympics, they were the gold sponsor. You know, they're trying to educate people on, you know, mostly their employees on how to help people with disabilities get through the airport. Because traveling's hard, man, so they're trying to make their employees help people with mental disabilities, physical disabilities, just get through the airport, make travel easier and not as stressful as it normally is. I know I don't like traveling. It's stressful, man. The airports are crazy. The lines are long.
It is so overrated. There's nothing glamorous about it, man. It's not what it's cracked out to be.
It's not. So United is trying to make it easier for people, especially people with disabilities, any kind of disability, to travel and make it easier for them. And they're a huge partner of Special Olympics. I've been traveling around with this girl all day, Bree, who's a Special Olympian. She's unbelievable. Her story is phenomenal. She's been telling it all morning. I've been listening to her, but she's a huge inspiration for all people, especially Special Olympians.
You know, I was looking forward to meeting her. Tell me about her. What is she like?
Unbelievable. So she was autistic when she was younger. She couldn't barely speak. She took all these. She went to therapy to learn how to speak. I guess from what she says, loud noises bothered her. And to hear her talk now, she speaks better than I do. And I don't speak well, but she speaks really well because I'm a mumbler. I talk fast, but she's very articulate. She's smart. She's now running track at Tennessee Wesleyan. She's a college athlete. It's unbelievable.
She runs like 5.5-minute miles. She's absolutely amazing.
It's a 19.5-minute 5K, so she's very impressive.
Brian, it's really funny you said you talk fast because I'm looking at the clock and I'm like, man, me and my man have covered a lot of ground, and we have a lot of time left.
Doing
and it dawned on me, we're the two fastest talkers ever. That's what it is.
I can get it
you and I, like, it's like somebody took the tape and turned it up 3 times speed. That's what it is.
I can't help it. I always try and slow down.
Me neither,
bro. Can't.
I
just feel like I need to talk fast. I get excited.
I feel the same way. I've only got one gear, too. I get it.
Yeah.
Listen, what's it like? And I've always known this, though. What's it like to be a great athlete in Chicago? It's not like lot of other towns. It's not a hell of a lot of fun when things don't go well.
Yeah.
But, man, if it goes well, what's it like? Is there a better town to be a great athlete?
Not in my opinion, especially football. You know, Michael obviously was there all those years, but I came after Michael. And when you're winning a football in Chicago, there's no better place to be. And this year, they experienced that. We went to the playoff game, my wife and I did. I haven't heard Soldier feel like that in a long time. And you walk out, the fans are just the buildings are all lit up with Bears signs and everything. There's no better place to be when they're winning.
Brian Urlacher, my guest. How are you going to spend the rest of the weekend? Are you staying in town? Are you going to bust out?
I'm here till Sunday morning. I'm leaving Sunday morning to go back to Arizona. I got a few more things to do during the week, and then we'll get out of here and go back home.
Did you bring the golf clubs? Or no?
You know, it's too cold.
I haven't been outside, man. That tells you where I know.
Well, it's not as cold as Chicago, but it's like minus 40 there right now. But I played golf last week and a little bit this week. I'm tired. I'm worn out.
Are you addicted to that like some guys? I mean, some guys can't play.
Yeah.
Okay, you were. What happened?
I was. I got worse, man. So I was like a 1.7 handicap.
Dude.
So I was pretty good.
Well, I didn't know you were that good.
Yeah, I was, and I'm not. Now I'm like a 6.7. I've just gone the wrong direction. I kept practicing. I kept getting lessons, and then I just cannot play like I used to. It's frustrating.
You just lost it.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell happened, man. It's frustrating. And talking, I would shoot 73, 74, throwing a 68, 69. I was
hustling dudes, making money on the course.
No, I don't. Maybe every once in a while. But when you can't play to your handicap, though, that's when you get in trouble.
You're right.
You get in big problems. So it's a great game, though. I love it.
Brian Urlacher, my guest. My man, it was good to get caught up. I appreciate it. Thanks for stopping by. Have a great couple of days. And we'll do it again soon, I hope.
Right. Yeah, thanks, Romy. Appreciate
good
it.
Good seeing you, man.
See you, man.
Matt Ryan joining us. Matt, good to see you. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on, Jim.
Always good to have you. Matt, let me get this out of the way. Before the start of the year, I'm guessing you were not envisioning sitting down with me the Thursday before a Super Bowl. My guess is you thought you'd be preparing for the game in your home stadium. So what's it like having everybody come to your town and unfortunately not playing in the game?
You know, it's always disappointing when you're not playing this week. And having been there a couple of years ago, you get a taste for it and what it's like, and you just want that. You know, you want to be back in it this week. But it's cool to have people here. I think Atlanta does such a good job with these kind of events, big events. The city's set up to handle it so well. So I'm proud of our city for doing a great job.
You know, in terms of this year, I had your teammate Austin Hooper on the program a little bit earlier this week. We talked about the fact that although the season didn't go the way anybody wanted to go, you did win your last three games. And he said that Dan Quinn deserved a lot of credit for that, for the way he closed out the season. What's it say about the coach and the guys in that locker room that they did not give in, they didn't mail it in?
Well, I think it's huge, and I think it's huge for our young guys, too, guys that you have to learn how to win in this league, and it's difficult to do. And so every opportunity that a lot of our young guys who are playing this year had to see what it takes to win games in this league and when you've got to make plays, do all that kind of stuff, I thought that was important. I thought it spoke to, you know, Dan's ownership of our locker room, and he gets guys to buy in better than anybody I've been around, and I thought that showed up the last couple of weeks.
I mean, that's so big, right? All these guys can X and O, but you got to get that buy-in. You've got to lead. You got to motivate. How does he get guys to buy in? Why is he so good at that?
He's just he's a really good communicator, and he's really honest. And you know, I think he just makes you. He makes you feel comfortable and very clear on what your role is, and he also encourages you. I mean, he's a really good person, and guys buy into that.
We're talking about Ryan on Radio Row, you know, mentioning Hooper again. Man, this cat's funny to me. He's really a cool dude, laid back, pretty relaxed off the field, but he shows up big on the field. What's it like to play with him?
He's awesome. You know, he really is. He's very California. He's very chill. You know,
we are, man.
Yeah, very chill. You know that as well as anybody. But when he gets out there, I mean, he's a beast. And he kind of has a laid-back vibe to him, but he wants it. You know, like, don't confuse that with him not wanting to be the guy to take, you know, on ownership of what we're doing on third downs in the red area. He's clutch, too. I mean, he makes plays. He's not scared to go out there and cut it loose.
Falcons quarterback Matt Ryan joining me on Radio Row. We'll talk Gatorade in just 1 minute. You want to talk about a California guy. You want to talk about a guy who catches passes. Tony Gonzalez, your former tight end, is up for the Hall of Fame. Is there any doubt in your mind, Matt, that he deserves to get in? And then what would it mean to you to see him get in?
There is zero doubt in my mind. I mean, this should be happening Saturday night, and you know, I'm excited for him. He deserves it. He's one of the most professional people I've ever been around. I learned so much from him. It was such a cool time in my career to learn from an older guy and to see how to do it the right way. And he taught me so much. It would mean a lot to me, just as a friend. He's a really good friend of mine, and I'd just be really, really happy for him. He deserves this. His family deserves it, and I hope for him it happens Saturday.
Well, I would imagine throwing the football to a guy like that, it's got to be great. But just as a guy, he's got so much of that it, right? When I used to interview him, he'd show up in person or on the phone. When I worked with him at CBS, on the NFL and CBS, when that guy walks in the room, you know something just happened, right? He's just one of those really different guys.
He's a presence. He's got this presence and aura to him when he comes in that you know, he's going to be special regardless of what he does. When he comes in, he does TV or whatever he's doing. He's just really good at all that stuff. But he had a presence in our locker room that was unmatched. I mean, when he spoke, he didn't speak a lot, but when he did, man, you listened to everything he was saying. And then his production week in and week out, he's probably one of the most consistent guys I've ever been around. You knew exactly what you were going to get from him every Sunday.
Hey, listen, you've been around a few guys like that, actually. Gonzalez, Julio Jones, Austin Hooper now, number of other great targets in your career. As you look at this, what makes a great receiver or a great tight end? I mean, what are you looking for in a pass catcher that signals that they're different from the rest?
Separation, how they create separation, and everybody does it differently. Like Tony Gonzalez created separation through length and through, you know, body position, whereas Julio Jones creates separation through size, speed,
strength,
running right past or running right through you, whatever it is. But then we have a guy like Calvin Ridley, who had a really good year for us too, and he creates separation using his quickness and his ability to release off the line of scrimmage. So for me, the number one thing is if guys can separate, you always got a chance to you know, move the ball and be productive.
Now, you're playing the game at a really high level still, but you see quarterbacks now playing into their late 30s, early 40s, and still playing at a high level. You're taking really good care of your body. You're working on the small things, like that warm-up routine you broke out a couple of years ago that had your teammates laughing and talking junk at the same time. What about that? How much more time do you spend focusing on things like mobility and stretching and massages than, say, when you first came into the league?
It's night and day. You know, it was all about, you know, weight training, getting stronger, and doing these things when I was younger, and it's really changed, and I feel better, and I've stayed healthier, adjusting to training differently. You know, I've got a massage therapist that I work with 3 days a week during the season. That it's not just getting rubbed down too. I mean, it's working, and
like deep tissue stuff,
deep tissue stretching, all of that stuff. That's really helped me. But there's a real mindfulness now of wellness and how to take care of yourself to create longevity. And I think that's important. I really feel like, you know, I can play for a long time if I continue to feel the way that I do.
Yeah, there's also you have to learn how to win. Like you said, you've got to learn about the league. There's this other great story in your rookie year, third snap of your career. But before we get to that, your backup, Chris Redman, told you, hey, when something good happens in this league, man, don't celebrate too much or you're going to wear yourself out. So what happened on that third snap?
Dude, a 62-yard touchdown pass on the skinny post on the backside. And so he scores, and I was going crazy.
Mike Jenkins, right?
Mike Jenkins caught it, and it was a skinny post on the backside. He hit this, and I came over, and I was exhausted, man. I was tired on the side.
From celebrating.
He was like, dude, it's cool. It's cool. If you throw it on your first one, you can celebrate as much as you want.
Yeah, so, in other words, Redman was right.
Redman was definitely right. Experience backup.
All right, so part of taking care of yourself is the work that you're doing with Gatorade. They've got a brand-new limited edition flavor for me. Break this down. What's the flavor? What do you like about it?
Okay, so it pays homage to the state of Georgia. It's we're known as the Peach State, and this is Peach Blitz. So it's limited edition for this week. It tastes really good. I like it, and just happy to partner up with them. I've been a partner with them for a long time, and it's cool to be able to promote that in our hometown.
Let me say something, man. I don't know how many of these things you've done today, but you showed up like that was your first, man. That's a pro right there. That's a pro effort.
Well, I appreciate it. You make it easy on me, man.
No, man, I appreciate it. It's great to see you. Where should I go to dinner tonight? I've not gotten out of the hotel this week.
Okay, what are you in the mood for? Sushi? You like sushi? It sounds weird.
No, I'm a big sushi guy, actually, yeah.
Umi.
Yeah, really?
Umi and Buckhead.
What do you get there?
Oh, man.
What anything. Don't you get there?
Yeah, no, anything. The tuna appetizer is unreal. Gosh. The lobster teppanyaki.
Okay, good.
It's good.
You know, I was going to say steak, but you know what? Sushi's much better.
You know
I'll
what?
Do it.
Steak's good here, too. Go to
all
Bones.
Right. Hey, check this out. I need to talk to you about a brand new product that I've been using, Aftershocks. They are the best sounding, most innovative headphones that I've ever owned. They feature a patented bone conduction technology. The headphones do not go inside your ear like earbuds, which hurt, that are constantly falling out. Aftershocks rest gently just outside your ear, and they produce sound by sending mini vibrations through your cheekbone to your inner ear by bypassing your eardrum. It sounds crazy. It works beautifully. And they're safer for driving in any outdoor activity because you have to hear what's going on around you, like the traffic and emergency vehicles. Aftershocks are perfect if you're outside running or biking, since you need to hear. It's a huge safety factor. I am never going back to regular headphones again. Aftershocks wireless open ear headphones are one of the coolest things I have ever seen. Order an Aftershocks tech bundle right now and get $50 off. Simply hit roam.aftershocks.com and use Roam at checkout. That's the word after and then SHOKZ.com. Roam.aftershocks.com.
He was the 63rd pick out of LSU in 2014. Jarvis Landry joins me right now. Juice, what's up? How are you?
What's up, baby? It's always good to see you.
Good to see you. Now, you got a guest with you, my man Nick Kelly. Nick is a huge fan of yours. He has CF. He's a huge ambassador for the CF Foundation. Nick, what's going on? How's your day going?
Man, living the dream. Living the dream. I'm good.
Good, man. Good to see you. And let me get back to you in 1 second, Nick. Jarvis, let me talk to you about a couple of things. You and I have been talking during the year. It's great to see you in person. Thanks for coming by. Listen, when you first got to Cleveland, they were 0-16, and you were talking Super Bowl. Now, you're not there yet, but considering where this team was and what you did, man, it's pretty darn close. Were you trying to speak that thing into existence, or did you really see something when you got there that made you think all of that was possible?
Well, I know me for me personally, you know, I trained every year to play in this game that's played this weekend and win it. you know, and that's been my mindset. That's been my attitude since I stepped in the NFL field. And I just believe that the culture that was in the Cleveland Brown organization, you know, needed to understand that when we take the field, it's expecting to win and not hoping to win. You know, that we put all this work in and it should pay off with a ring.
All right, so listen, I'm not there. I'm on the other side of the country watching it, but I could see something special is going on there. In fact, I've been saying since the start of the year, the Browns are the new America's team, man. There's just something different about you guys. What's it feel like to be on the inside of such an amazing turnaround?
Man, it's a great. It's a wonderful feeling. The fans are amazing. The fan base, you know, even around the world, the fan base has traveled well. And not only that, you know, just being here and talking to people, talking to guys that I've respected for a long time and around the league, from commentators to, you know, yourself to other players, and hearing they see the potential that we have in Cleveland, and that's so exciting.
Maybe I'm selling you guys short with America's team, man. You're the world's team.
That's the world's team.
When you talk to guys around the league, you know, it used to be, hey, man, be careful or we'll send you to Cleveland, like it was some kind of punishment.
Yep.
Does it feel right now like it's a destination?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I know, you know, when everything was going on with on a trade block or even now, you know, I'm recruiting as many guys, and I'm sure even at the Pro Bowl, you know, guys coming up on their contract, I'm talking to them about potentially joining us in Cleveland and, you know, making it special.
Dude, what do they say? What's the reaction now when you bring it up?
We'll see.
It's not no, though.
It's not no, you know, and that's all we know. That's all we want. That's a start.
Jarvis Landry, my guest. I wonder, you know, because it sounded like so far out there and crazy when you first said it. Now that you're a 7-win team, and I know that's not the goal, but you are a 7-win team, considering where you started, is there any part of you that wants to say, where are y'all at now? You see what I told you? Now you see what I'm talking about?
I mean, to some degree, you know what I mean? But some degree, but I think at the same time, you know, it was a humbling year. You know, I know for myself individually and personally, but I think as a team, we understand what we have. You know, from the younger guys, from Baker Mayfield to Chubb to Myles Garrett, you know, and I think we got some structure put in place now, having a head coach, an offensive coordinator, you know, and just kind of seeing how things go.
So how was it humbling for you personally and professionally? How do you mean?
I just didn't have the year that I thought I would have, you know. Obviously, a lot of things happened and throughout the year, coaching changes, quarterback changes and things like that, but I just felt like I could have helped the team more. You know, I left a couple balls out there that I dropped personally, and just saw focus things, you know. And I know as the player that I am and as competitive as I am, you know, I want to make those plays for the team to put us in the best position to win.
I talked to your new coach a few days ago. What do you make of that coaching change?
I like it. I love it. You know, his connection with Baker, his connection with all the players really on the offensive side of the ball, it's really rare. You know, you don't find a coach all the time that really relates to his players. But also, it's going to be interesting to see now, put in the power position of being a head coach, you know, how he approaches, you know, treating his guys. Hopefully it's the same way.
I was going to say, right, like, you don't want to change.
Right, of course not.
You can't. This is why guys buy in. This is why guys react to the guy, because he's real and it works for him. But then again, if there's one guy that I trust not to change, it's got to be Freddie.
Right. Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
We'll see. Jarvis Landry joining me. You know, we saw this on Hard Knocks. You talk about that winning mentality. I don't care what the record is. I don't care what's happened prior to this. You have to have that winning mentality. What's that like? I mean, we see it on Sundays, but that thing's got to show up every single day when we don't see you, right? How do you explain that winning mentality and what you're looking for?
Well, everything starts with practice. You know, everything for me starts in my mind, in my focus, in my preparation. You know, and I think just talking to the receivers, I think a lot of the world has seen the little speech on Hard Knocks. You know, it was just about the mindset, you know, and creating that mindset and being true competitors. I love this game so much, you know. I mean, literally so much, you know. It's consumed my whole life, you know, and it's really all I know. And I think that's why my approach to the game has been like it is for so long.
Explain the love of the game, the love of the sport. Where does it come from? What do you love so much about football?
Just the grind, you know, the grind. I think it's no better feeling than seeing all my teammates work hard. It's no better feeling than seeing, you know, the coaches' staff, you know, the time they spend away from their families, the time that all of us spend away from our families, you know, with one common goal, and that's to win, you know, throughout the whole week. And to see it pay off on Sunday is something that, you know, is really a feeling that it's tough going without. I hate the off season. You know, I love it.
You love that grind that much.
Absolutely.
You want to be in the facility. You want to be in there doing work with your guys.
Absolutely.
All right, you got Nick right to your side. I'm going to bring him in 1 second. I had Baker on the show yesterday, Jarvis, and he was talking about how much he loves that city and the fit between he and the city. I'm looking at you. It seems to be the exact same thing. How would you describe the attitude that that city has to you, to the football team, and the fit for you personally?
Well, I mean, it's a football town. You know, I think that for me, being there and understanding that and seeing the history behind the Cleveland Browns and all the things that, you know, happened when the team went to Baltimore and all these history facts, you know, it makes it that much more exciting, and it gives us that much more, you know, energy to be able to go out and compete for those, for the fans, for the city, for you know, Cleveland Browns organization, period.
Hey, Nick, what's it like for you to see the Browns playing the way they are right now? How exciting is it for you?
Man, it's a godsend. Like, I love my Browns. I bleed orange and brown. I've been a Browns fan since day one. And finally, after, you know, everyone knows all the stats and they plaster it, all the downfall we've had, and finally getting a chance to watch good football. You know, the fact that they're winning, that's an amazing bonus. Just seeing good football week in and having a player, like you said, Jarvis said, the mentality, man. It's watching people who want to be in the city. You know what I mean? Cleveland, we ride for you. So having players who want to be there, embody what our city has, man, is so important. It's amazing.
This city especially. Now, I've done business in that town. I've done appearances in that town. I love Cleveland. I mean, I love Cleveland. Yeah. That town has been so good to me personally and this show. But it's so easy for people who have never been to take runs at them, to clap back, because they don't know. They don't know what they're talking about. They've never been. Give us a little intel. What's something that people who've never been and don't know should know about your town?
The one thing I tell people who've never been to Cleveland is it's really not what perception. A lot of people, I went out of town one time. I was in California, and someone asked me, how many cows do you pass when you drive to work? What? None. Like, that's
come on,
a
come on, Nick, just answer
question.
The question, man.
Like, those are the questions. Like, those are
come
things.
On, man, I'm from California. Nobody asked you that.
Like, those are
somebody
things,
from California asked you that.
That's what someone asked me, man. Cleveland, we are a real
town. Dude, I love that story.
Town.
Just say they're from Arizona or something.
Like, those are, man, the thing you don't know about Cleveland, we've been a top 10 food city in for the last 5 years. We have so many local restaurants. We have a happening downtown. We've been up and coming. The city is more than just LeBron. You know, we have so much, and it's been that way, and we have more to offer.
My man,
look at this guy here, Nick.
Dude, my man settle in or what?
Yes, sir.
Dude, he's more comfortable behind that mic than most of the Hall of Famers I've talked to this week.
Than me right now, guys.
Than me right now.
I love Jarvis, my city.
Good for you, man. Good for you. Back in December 2016, I had Boomer Esiason on the show, and he's devoted his life to raising funds to fight cystic fibrosis. He and I talked about the cleats that you were wearing at that time. My Cause, My Cleats program, he was incredibly moved by that gesture and what you were doing. And it goes back to your high school sweetheart who passed away in 2015. Who was that and what was she like?
Her name was Maya. And, you know, pretty much my first love, you know, one of the women that kind of helped me become the man I am. Probably one of the reasons that I'm sitting in this chair today, you know. And I made a promise to her back then that, you know, regardless of what happened between us, that I will always, you know, push for this cause, promote this cause, you know, and raise more awareness about it.
And that's exactly what you're doing. That's part of why Nick is rolling with you now. Now that Nick is here, you've got something for Nick, and I'm not even sure Nick knows what it is.
No.
Am I right?
I don't think he does.
Well, let's do it. What do you got?
Well, I mean, courtesy of, you know, just your inspiration, man, your inspiration. And I know it's been a journey for you, you know, but I got something to add to that journey. So she came all this way. I got something for you. Super Bowl tickets for you, for you and your sister. I got two tickets for you guys to go to the game.
Oh, my God.
Here you go, baby. Here you go. Come on, man. Stand up. Give me a hug or something,
man.
Yeah.
Oh, man,
it's love.
Thank you so much.
It's love. It's love. It's love, man. It's love. You're an inspiration to a lot of people. It's love. It's love. It's love. Real talk.
Oh, man, thank you.
Jarvis Landry joining us. What an amazing moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What an amazing moment.
We riding for Cleveland, right?
Oh, man, thank you so much.
All day. All day. All day. All day.
All
day. All day.
Oh, man. Thank you so much. Yeah, man. Just, man, this.
Nick,
Oh, man.
Talk to me for a minute, Nick. So you,
man.
Talk to me. What? How's it been going? Like, what did you think that you were doing? You were just kind of hanging out with your guy. Guess I'll go talk to Rome for a few moments. Like, so, what did you think today was going to be?
Man,
that's a total shock right there, right?
Yeah, and I was just told I was going to come down and meet Jarvis and kind of have a conversation with him. And they were like, you know, just kind of talk to him. You know, I've done a lot of ambassador work for the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation. I pride myself on being an advocate. My disease does not define me. It's all about the mentality, and that's something we have in common. You know, he always talks about that grind. You have to have a mentality. So that's something that I've always prided myself on, is having that mentality, speaking out. And so that's what I thought we were going to just have a conversation. So, I, you know, just coming on the show, talking to you, I didn't know anything about that. And so that was a surprise. It was like, oh, by the way, you're going to go up there with him. I'm like, I love me some Jim Rome. I'm cool. All right, bet. Yeah. So, and then just having this moment, man, it's just, you know, you always hear the stories about what people are, you know what I mean? And people have always said, you know, he believes in the cause, and I followed him. It's funny, when I first found out he was getting traded to Cleveland, the first thing I did is called the Browns facility to be like, yo, I need to talk to this guy and let him know what kind of events we got going on, just on behalf of me, so he can be active in our community. And so you just don't, you rarely ever see someone who really means what they stand by, you know, before anyone does that, and just having this. So having him really show, you know, be what he's saying he is, man, it just means so much. And I was telling him, like, I love sports. I love football, man. It's, and like I said, and so just having this opportunity, man, it's overwhelming for someone to be as genuine as they are and to believe what he's saying, man. It's amazing.
Nick, I can't tell you how much I respect you, man. I'm blown away. I'm blown away by your presence. And Jarvis, what did that mean? I mean, there was so much love in that moment. What did that mean to you to be able to do that for Nick?
You know, when the idea came up and we were trying to make a choice or a decision about, you know, how we would do this, I think it was just put together so beautifully. And why not this way? You know what I mean? I think we both have been affected by this cause, you know, and, you know, then people that are actually struggling with this disease aren't the only people that's fighting it, you know. And I just wanted you to know, and everybody to know, you know, that I'm here fighting it with you guys, and I'm here for you all the time.
I want to say also the surprise was made possible through the Jarvis Landry and Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, the Northern Ohio chapter, and the Cleveland Browns. Really quickly, Nick, if people want more information, they want to get more involved, what's the best way to do it?
Go to the CFF.org site.
I've got this momentum. I want to keep going. I'm joined right now by a jungle favorite. I love this guy. Two-time Super Bowl champ, a Super Bowl MVP, four straight Pro Bowls, 1,000 career receptions, a Dancing with the Stars champion, first-team All-SEC at Georgia, the pride of Forest Park High School in Forest Park, Georgia. He appears courtesy of Hyundai and their Shopper Assurance Program. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, you can see the bling, you can see the rings, and you see they belong to Hines Ward. Oh, man, Hines, what's up? How are you?
What's up, Jim, man? We go way back. People, I don't think you guys realize the history that we guys
tell
like, that we have.
Tell
man.
Preach.
Hey, man, this
preach.
Guy's been, he's an OG, man. He's been in the game a long time. I've always admired him. He keeps it real with everybody, man. I appreciate the love, though.
Appreciate you, Hines. I appreciate it. You were always one of my favorite guys and still to talk to because you keep it real.
I do.
You're not looking to take anybody down. You've got no agenda.
No.
You just keep it real.
That's what the
people
want.
It's a lost art, man.
Yes, that's what the people want. You got to keep it real. I learned that from you.
You didn't trust me. You knew already.
No, but you call it a spade a spade, and I respect that. While I was playing, you call it, you saw it, and then you told it.
I miss watching you play, by the way. I want to get to you. I want to get to your approach and style in a minute.
All right.
But you and I are talking about a Super Bowl involving the Patriots again. Oh. You've got two rings. I'm looking at them right now.
Yeah.
I see them. They're unbelievable. You know how hard it is to get one.
No question.
You know how hard it is to get a second one. Knowing all that, what do you think when you see Belichick and Brady and what they've done?
It's mind-boggling. It really is. I mean, I'm 42. I don't want no parts of football. Like, I don't want to play. What Tom Brady is doing is crazy. Listen, I called them a cheater. I said they did liar. I called them everything that I possibly could call them, and yet he's still is in the Super Bowl. He still has chances to win Super Bowl. And if he wins this one, they tie the Steelers with six all time. So I'm rooting for the Rams, but I don't bet against Belichick and Brady. The guys have proven that they can get it done.
Hines Ward joining me on the set. Now, you're a Steelers legend, and you know what they're about.
Yes.
You know how they conduct themselves. You know how they carry themselves. And during the season, you said that you were, quote, embarrassed by all the drama surrounding that team. What were you seeing at that time that made you feel that way?
I felt like I was watching the old Cincinnati Bengals. TJ, Ocho, those guys. Very talented, but you it was the antics that you were talking about. You weren't talking about what they were doing on the field. You were talking about what they were doing off the field. And I think, you know, I'm not going to give Antonio Brown a pass. I mean, you're a grown man. They pay you a lot of money. You got to grow up at some point and be like, listen, I got to be held accountable for my actions. I need to be there for my team. But at the same time, some of this stuff falls on Coach Tomlin. You allowed some of this stuff to go on. You know, think about Coach Belichick. He sat Malcolm Butler down in the biggest game of them all, a guy who just helped them win a Super Bowl a couple years before that. They don't play that. The culture of the Patriots is what the culture used to be like in Pittsburgh. You rarely ever heard about guys off the field. And especially, you know, when you talk about Ben Roethlisberger having a radio show every week and then calling out guys. We had one motto in Pittsburgh: keep my name out your mouth in the media. Keep my name out your mouth in the media. And you talk about the brotherhood. If we're brotherhood, come talk to me like a brother, a big brother. Hey, I need you to run through that route. Hey, I need you to do this. You don't have to put it out there to the media. I mean, you got that C on your jersey. You're a captain. Lead the younger guys by not putting them out there in the media about what they should and shouldn't be doing. Come to them like a big brother. Hey, man, I got you. But on this play, I need you to do that.
That's the real. That's keeping it real right there.
Yeah.
There's so much good stuff in that. Like this whole thing about Ben, you're right. He's got a radio program, and he's criticizing guys in the media. And when asked about that, Ben says, you know what? I've done this long enough. I think I've earned that right.
Wrong. You don't. I don't care. You earned the right you play, because we didn't chastise you when you played, when you were a rookie, messing up. You didn't see us throwing you under the bus. I mean, we're a family, and I think with Coach Tomlin, he allowed AB the Facebook Live going on and things like that. Well, nothing happened. You find him some money. He got plenty of money. That fine does nothing for him. But, you know, you got to set the tone. You know, the standard is the standard in Pittsburgh. We got a big sign, the standard and the standard. But the culture that exists in Pittsburgh now, that's not the standard of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Has that changed? Has Tomlin loosened the reins? Is it different than it used to be?
Yeah, when Tomlin first got there, he was militant. If your guys wore college shorts because of where they went, we still had our practice jersey. But if guys wore their, like I had Georgia shorts on, go in there and take them off. I want all of our team unified. Now, some players didn't like that. Why? Because we won a Super Bowl before Tomlin got there, and that's what we used to do. Some of the vets kind of bumped heads with Tomlin, and guess what Tomlin did?
He got rid of them.
So now coming full circles and now seeing the things that go on, I just scratched my head. I'm like, what's going on?
He got rid of them, Hines, but now he says things like, hey, listen, man, as long as this guy makes plays on Sunday, I will overlook some of these things.
But these are guys that play and won Super Bowl.
Right.
How do you get rid of guys who've been there, done that, and have won a Super Bowl because of college shorts that they weren't going to wear?
So
we didn't look uniform.
Is it irreconcilable, or can they all get on the same page?
No, it
is. Or has that ship sailed already?
No, I think it can, because you're a grown man. All these guys are 30 and above. You can sit down in the room and say, hey, Jim, I don't like when you did that. I don't like, I appreciate it. I didn't know how you felt that. I apologize. Let's go out there and win a championship. Let's go. Hug each other, move on. So there's still hope that I got. But when AB's not returning Mr. Rooney's call, I got Mr. Rooney on speed dial. Anytime he calls, hello? Hey, Mr. Rooney. Hey, how you doing?
To this day.
You just don't push Mr. Rooney and send him to the voicemail. That's something you don't do. That's the one call that I think you might need to pick up.
So you almost never hear from him in public. When Mr. Rooney sets out and says in public, you know what, this may not be something we can fix. How strong a statement is it from that guy?
That is strong statement, because he's not one of those owners.
No,
he don't really get involved or come out. But when he says something, darn it, you better listen to it, because he's a man of his words. And I just think it's embarrassing being that we just beat the Patriots in the regular season. We're such a great team, and yet here we are, not in the playoffs, and all we're doing is talking about the drama with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
And I appreciate your thoughts on that. Hines Ward, my guest. Now, when discussing your candidacy for the Hall of Fame, Mike Tomlin said the numbers you put up are impressive, but, quote, Ask the DBs and linebackers that he played against. Was his presence different than some of those other guys? Whether he was getting the ball or not, he impacted the game. People knew when they were playing Hines Ward. End quote. It's a really powerful statement. What's it mean to you to hear that?
I mean, that's the eye in the sky don't lie. That's what they say. Put it on tape, right? Listen, I don't know what the Hall of Fame criteria is. I really don't. I know I played on a predominantly run team blocking for Hall of Famer Jerome Bettis. I mean, tons of blocks, just going out there and watching a big guy run. So the attempts, I didn't have a lot of attempts in the passing game, and I played with 9 different quarterbacks over my career. So you statistically, my 1,000 catch to me compares to like 1,200 catches in other organizations. And also we played outside, but I don't know really what it is. But to me, the Pittsburgh Steelers wide receiver, they made plays when it mattered the most. In the big games, they were the go-to guys. Lynn Swann, John Stallworth, they did all that when it mattered the most. Yes, their stats aren't up there with all the other guys, but when the big game was on the line, I like to put myself in that same category with those guys.
They made plays. You made plays. Lynn Swann was an unbelievable playmaker.
Unbelievable.
I mean, you look at that guy. He was not the fastest guy. He was not the biggest guy.
But
my man on the biggest stage made some unbelievable plays.
He showed up, right?
Yeah, Hines, the game changes so much. I mean, since you retired, what do you think when you watch the receivers of this era? Do they have that same physicality that you had, or maybe do they not need it because of the way the game is officiated
now? Yeah, the way the game is officiated now, you don't really need it. I mean, think about the safeties that I had to go up against. I mean, Rodney Harrison, guys that would take your head off. Ed Reed. I mean, I saw those guys constantly at least 2 or 3 times a year. The game has changed. I mean, the physicality of receivers going across the middle, I would go across the middle with my eyes closed now because I know you can't hit me. Or things were changed when I was playing. People gator arm that. You really didn't stretch out for that pass. But it is what it is. I mean, Mel Blount, when he was playing, you couldn't get off the line of scrimmage. So the game has evolved. Has it changed? Now, you
Donnie
can't even.
Shell.
Donnie Shell. You can't even touch receivers now off the line of scrimmage. So clearly it's an advantage to the offense. And as a defensive player, I feel sorry for defensive players because I don't know what to tell them. They can't tackle anybody. You can't really get all the head-to-head. You can't really touch anybody past 5 yards. I grew up, man, I had some beasts out there. James Hasty, all those guys that would beat you up all the way down the field. You had to get open going to Kansas City.
You were getting mugged. You were getting mugged.
Literally.
It was illegal mugging.
Yes, literally. But it is what it is. Listen, it's out of my control. My mom always used to tell me, you only can control what you can control. Don't worry about all the it's up to debate if I'm a Hall of Famer or not. But I ain't going to lie, it would be nice if you could get in there.
It'd be incredible.
It's like the cherry on top of the ice cream.
It would be the cap to an amazing career. Now, you're still very involved in the game. You're one of the executives with the Alliance of American Football. How did you get involved in the league?
Well, Bill Polian, you look at it and you talk about the credibility of the guys involved in the Alliance League from it's almost close to 500 years of NFL experience. But I think it's a necessity, not only for a developmental league that's complementary to the NFL, because guys just aren't given an opportunity to really showcase what they can do in training camp, because now they cut back. Now you can't even really get out there as a team until late June. Then you have 1 month, and then if you get injured, that first preseason game, you miss it. And now it's time to prepare for the season. So there's a lot of guys that get cut after training camp, and I think that's key. But you look at the old NFL Europe, how that used to be a league that used to develop. Look at Kurt Warner, all these guys. That's what our league can do right here in the States. But I think the fact that the credibility that we bring, I think that the trust that we're building with the players to help them understand, hey, this is the fastest way that you can play because you're running real NFL schemes, getting coached by real NFL guys. This is the best way to get evaluated by NFL scouts. And then also the great partnership that we have with CBS.
There you
guys
go.
Have signed on. And then fans want more football. Think about it. Once the Super Bowl is over, everybody's like, oh, I can't wait to training camp.
Yeah, now, nobody's saying, you know what, man, I really need a break from football.
Yeah, people's like, hey.
Man, I'm really sick of football.
Exactly. They're going to go out. We're going to give you 10 more weeks.
Man, football's starting to suck, man. I really got to get away from football.
Exactly. So let's give the fans what they want, man. So I'm super proud to be at Alliance. February 9th, it's going down a week after Super Bowl. CBS, man, I can't wait. Super excited.
You nailed that for me. I don't even have to say it. February 9th on CBS,
from the best.
That's how you do it.
From the best,
listen,
man.
Really quickly before you go, you're working with Hyundai and their Shopper Insurance program. That you have to handle.
Listen, Hyundai, brought Ed Reed and I together. I hadn't talked
How'd
to
that
Ed.
Go?
It went
that
well.
Go?
It went well. Right. Like it, we reminisced over our battles. He said, "Man, my neck still messed up. You hit me so hard." Ed hit me one time on my quad. I felt like I got a bruise for life right there. But for Hyundai to bring both of us together, man, that's what it's all about. But you got to check out Hyundai's YouTube page where you got Jason Bateman. Of course, all the commercials for the Super Bowl, man. Super hysterical. YouTube it, man. Super funny. I love the partnership with Hyundai.
Hines Ward.
Man, I'm getting better, man.
Dude,
I'm telling you.
Dude,
every year I'm impressing you,
Jim. You've already had yourself. Yeah, every year you impress me. But you just had yourself a day now. You had yourself a day, Hyundai Ward.
Listen, you bring
That's
out
how
the
you
best
do it.
Me. You bring out the best
You should take that. You should take that headphone off and just drop it like a mic, man. Good
I
job,
love you, man.
Dude.
I love you, too.
I appreciate you, Hyundai. Always have, always will.
Always
And
great
I can't
time.
Wait till we do it again, man. Thank you so
anytime,
much.
Anytime, Jim.
I don't remember the week going any faster than this week, and we're going to keep this thing rolling. Let me change up on you. We are joined right now by the driver of the number 9 Chevrolet for Hendrick Motorsports in the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series. Let me run this down quickly. 2016 Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series Rookie of the Year. 2014 NASCAR Xfinity Series Champion, the youngest National Series champion in history. 3 wins, 11 top fives, 21 top tens last season. The 2018 most popular driver. Today he appears courtesy of Kelley Blue Book and their features like Price Advisor and Instant Cash Offer. We will get into all that. My guest, Chase Elliott. Chase, good to see you. How are you?
Yeah, great. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you coming by. Now, from where I'm sitting, I just mentioned it, that's a huge year. All right, so first 3 cup wins, 11 top fives, 21 top tens. You were one of 3 drivers to win twice in the playoffs. As you look back, what kind of thoughts do you have on that year?
Yeah, just nice to get over the hump of winning. I mean, that was the biggest hurdle for me and our team. You know, going winless those first 2 years, that's certainly not fun. But to grab a win and grab a couple more shortly thereafter this year was great. So, you know, I think getting over that hurdle is awesome. Moving forward, we just need to do it often and do it consistently.
You know, was that a case whereby you were running well, but running well and winning are two different things? As an example, your crew chief, Alan Gustafson, said something interesting. Quote, "I think I underestimated how it was wearing on him and how personally he was taking it, not winning races. Once he won, I realized, wow, it was something that he was taking very personal and something that was weighing on him." End quote. Did he pretty much nail that? Is that how that felt?
I mean, it definitely, I think for all of us, not just me, I mean, we all wanted to win. And I think the hard part for us, and certainly for me, is how close we had been on more than one or two occasions. And I felt as if I had probably messed up 2 or 3 of those single-handedly. So, you know, that's not fun, right? You don't want to be the guy to mess up a race win. And I was certainly that guy on more than one occasion. So, was just nice to be able to go back and to have more opportunities to win. And the way we won a few of those races, or a couple of those 3 this past year, were kind of in the same way that we had lost a couple of them in the year prior. So I like that aspect, and really, I think, gained a lot of confidence for our entire group, which goes a long way in our sport.
So how do you explain that? Is it just racing luck, or maybe does winning beget winning?
You'd like to think it does, but at the same time, I can't sit here and tell you I magically changed a bunch of stuff or my life, you know, changed and made me that much better of a race car driver after we won a race. I mean, I don't necessarily think I changed my approach. I do think the only thing that really comes from it is just the confidence in winning and being able to close out races. And I felt like that was the biggest thing we were missing as a group. And yeah, it was just nice to get that and kind of get a better handle on it.
Chase Elliott joins me on Radio Row here in the ATL. Now, when you're racing for Hendrick Motorsports, you're racing for one of the most dominant forces literally in all of sports. What makes the Hendrick Motorsports organization so special, so unique, so good?
Well, I mean, their history and then being around for so long. Obviously, Mr. Hendrick has had a ton of success with his championships with Jeff Gordon and Jimmy Johnson, Terry Labonte, and trying to add to that is a major goal of mine. I don't want to be the guy that doesn't do good for the boss, right? So just trying to keep that rolling and get back to a consistent winning way, I think, for him is huge and something we all want to do.
Now, when you and I spoke earlier, we touched on the impact and legacy of your father, Bill Elliott. And as a kid, I'm curious, what was it like to go to the track and see the fact that so many people looked up to your dad?
Well, that's what drove me to want to race. I mean, at the end of the day, when I went to races as a kid, you know, I see, obviously, my dad being a hero of mine, but then I look at him and what he is to everyone else and all the people that are there to watch him. And that just blew my mind as a, you know, six, seven-year-old, you know, just kind of starting to understand what's going on. And I just had so much respect for that and thought that was the coolest thing ever, and how much of an event each and every weekend was, and him to be, you know, a star of that. It was just so cool. So that was what sparked me to do it.
I can only imagine what that was like. For instance, like my father, I went into the family business, and it was not this business, and it went horribly, man. He fired me. He didn't love me, but he made it clear business is business. You're not really good at our business. Hit the bricks, pal. But the one good thing about that, as bad as I was at the family business, and as much as it stung that I couldn't do it, to go out and hear the people in his industry talk about him and how much they liked him, how much they respected him, it kind of pumped me up. I'm like, you mean that guy that I don't get along with ever?
The guy that fired you.
The guy that fired me, right? Yeah. But I can only imagine if I heard that 5 or 10 times and that kind of pumped me up, I can only imagine what it was like for you, where everywhere you went, everybody loved your dad. And as evidence of that, he won the most popular driver award 16 times. Dale Jr. won it 15 times, and you won it last year. What does that particular award mean to you?
Well, I think the coolest part about that award is that it's been between an Elliott and Earnhardt for however many years.
It's incredible.
Which is pretty neat, you know, to think back on in the history of our sport. Obviously, I'm lucky to be able to have been in a position I've been in to carry on, I guess, the history of racing in my family. And I think Dale Jr. the same way with his dad. You know, he was lucky enough and good enough to keep it going. And people obviously saw something in that, and it made them want to follow along.
Chase, do you feel like, and I've seen some of the powers that be in the sport suggest as much, they're all looking at you. They're all looking at you not to carry this thing by yourself, but as to one of the guys that they're counting on to direct eyeballs, promote the thing, whatever you want to say, you've got that it. You've got the name, you've got the it, you've got ability. Do you feel the pressure, or because you're a Georgia fan, can I go ahead and assume that you're going to go with the Kirby Smart mantra that pressure is a privilege?
I'm going to go with B. It is a privilege, but I am a Kirby Smart fan for sure. Big Georgia fan too. But you know, I can't, you know, being realistic, I can't control what they label me as or what they try to push or do. I go into the situations that I'm asked to go do and try to make the most of them, and ultimately I get paid to go drive fast on Sundays, and if I do my job there, I feel like I've done my part.
All right, you're a huge Georgia fan, actually. You got a couple of former Bulldog running backs. You've got Todd Gurley and Sony Michel. Who are you picking to win on Sunday, and why?
This is really tough on me, I want you to know.
I can tell, man.
Huge fan of both and what they did at Georgia, but I don't know if this is a popular opinion or not, but I'd like to see the Patriots win. I think they have the upper hand this weekend. I just have a lot of respect for Tom Brady and what he's done over his career. And for me, my age, you know, I'm 23, so like my entire life of watching football has been the Tom Brady, Bill Belichick era of dominance. And, you know, that is just, I've had so much respect for that, but also how he handles his life and all the things that he has going on, and the pressure and the people and the lights and the cameras. You know, he does a really good job with that. So I'd like to see him win one more. And if he's winning one more, then that means Sony's getting one too.
I guarantee Tom Brady is a pressure is a privilege guy. I've never heard him say it, but I guarantee he's one of those guys. All right, you're working with Kelley Blue Book today. What led you to team up with them, and what are the types of things you're working on?
Yeah, KBB has been a great partner of mine. We're actually, believe it or not, working on our fourth year together. So it's just been a real natural fit with their, you know, trusted resource and the car buying industry, and me driving Chevrolets on Sunday. It makes sense. And I look forward to another great year with them this year and hopefully many more.
He's appearing courtesy of the Kelley Blue Book and their features like Price Advisor and the Instant Cash Offer, the driver of the number 9 Chevrolet, and he is your 2018 most popular driver, Chase Elliott. Chase, great to see you in person. Yeah, thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Good seeing you. Well done. WBC heavyweight champion of the world. He is 40-0-1, 39 by knockout. He retained his title in a draw versus Tyson Fury in December. Deontay Wilder. What's up, champ?
What's going on? What's going on,
dude,
man?
You look,
doing all right?
You look good. I'm great.
Oh, man,
I'm great.
Thank you so much,
How
man.
How you feeling?
I feel wonderful. You know, when I walked up into the facility, man, I felt, I'm an energy person, by the way, so I felt the energy and of the environment. I said, yeah, this is going to be a great day because it's nothing but positive, great energy just oozing out of the place, man. I'm happy to be here.
I don't know, man. I love hearing that. I don't know if that's true. I mean, because let me tell you something. There is a lot of, excuse me, a lot of positive energy,
yeah.
But there's also a lot of D-bags here.
Come on now.
They're about the wrong things that are negative, man. I'm just keeping it real.
Well, thank
God. I'm glad that you can come in and suck some of that negative energy away and school people up.
That's right. That's right.
I got to ask you about your last year. When you look back on this past year, you had the PBC Fight of the Year in your win over Ortiz. Mm. You had the PBC Round of the Year in the Fury fight. How big was 2018 for you?
Man, 2018 was a magnificent year for me. It was a huge year. You know, we accomplished a lot of things out of that year. You know, we had big fights. You know, we came back. We fought killers after killers. You know, a lot of things that the sport don't do. You know, they can, but they don't do. You know, a lot of these fighters, they want big fights, then they want small fights. You know, that don't mean nothing. Just to milk it out. Just to, you know, keep their career going. Keep another year on their belt.
Like low risk, high reward.
There you go.
Stuff.
That's what we're looking for. And for me, you know, I'm all about my legacy. I'm all about being the best. I always say I'm the best. So I want to test myself each and every time. I don't care if I fight a number two guy one night and come back the next couple of months and fighting the number three guy. That's just my mentality. That's just what I do, you know. And I said I wanted it to be where it's one champion, one face, one name. That's what I'm leaning towards. And with that being said, I've had some magnificent fights with some great opponents, and it made my 18 amazing year.
Deontay Wilder joining us. He is the WBC heavyweight champ. Now, you were part of the greatest heavyweight fight in a long, long time. When you look back on that fight with Tyson Fury, what kind of thoughts do you have?
Man, just like you said, amazing. I got a lot of words to describe it. It was fantastic. It was amazing. It was a blessing. And, you know, and I'm ready to do it again. You know, I had the right dancing partner for that perfect moment in time, you know, because boxing is not our top sport here in America. You know, it had died down for a while because we had no American champion. And now that we got one, it's lit more than ever. It's exciting, and the heavyweight division is back on the map. But we still got a lot of work to do. You know, over time, it will be restored back to the best it's ever done, it's been. And you got the heavyweight champion right here. And people always talk about the golden era, but we can make this era golden with the resources and the things we have with the internet and the social media and stuff like that. We can make it
so
golden.
So what has to happen, man? It would be awesome.
Yeah.
I remember back in the day before there was MMA, boxing was the thing.
Mm.
Boxing was the thing. And if there were championship fights, that's all we talked about. The heavyweight champion was the biggest, baddest guy in all the sports.
Yes, sir.
How can it be like that again?
Well, you know, making the right fights at the right time, you know what I mean? And that's how it's going to work, being able to market, getting your guys out there, getting those faces out there, you know what I mean? It's been a lot of marketing on me from my last previous fights. Coming up, talking about 2018 and coming in, I've had a lot of great marketing on me that got me, you know, out there to a lot of people, you know, into the households. And, you know, my life has changed dramatically, you know, and it's been crazy. It's been tiring, but it's been amazing at the same time. It's what I've been, you know, been waiting on. This let me know that I'm in the right direction, and everything is going as planned. And that's what it's going to take. It's going to take a lot of marketing. It's going to take a lot of fighting the right fights and making the fights happen in the right appropriate times.
Deontay Wilder joining us, 40-0-1, 39 wins by knockout. When you hit Fury with that shot, you knocked him down in the ninth. You hit him with that monster shot in the 12th. I mean, you hit him with a shot.
Mm.
His eyes go back in his head. Do you think the fight's over at that point?
Man, when it not only went back in his head, it went slowly. It rolled slowly in the back of his head.
Generally, what does that mean? What does that tell you when you see that?
Man, usually when you see that, man, ain't no way. You know, when you see a man, eyes roll back in the back of his head, when you see his head hit the canvas and the muscles in his head start penetrating up, like the veins start popping up in his head, and then you start seeing his body stiff on like it's on cloud nine, you know it's over, you know? either Jack Reese had smelling sauce on his breath, or that man had a lot of prayers, or maybe he had, you know, he's a gypsy, so he believe in magic. Something.
Dude, when that man beat the count and got back up, what did you think?
Man, I was like, wow, that was like a wild moment, you know, but at the same time, it was exciting as well because, you know, it made the fight a controversial fight, and, you know, controversy sells, you know, it brings more attention, and that's what we want. That's another reason why that the heavyweight division is in great hands. It's blooming. It's developing like it is. You have fights like that, and then you have controversy. The people don't understand who won.
It sells, man.
Sells.
And then you got to run it back. All right. So last thought. What is next then?
For me, you can look for me to return in the ring in May. I don't know specific date yet. But you can look forward to in May, and looking like what's going on now, looking like either Vegas or the Barclays Center, and looking like the Barclays Center is coming on strong. You know, it's all about when you're doing these things. It's all about who wants to host the fight, who could put up the most money to put on the fight and host it. And you know, Barclays Center has been wanting a big fight like this for a very long time, and it's looking like they're coming on strong.
We are live in Atlanta, the site of Super Bowl 53. As you know, it is a CBS Super Bowl. We are joined right now by the chairman of CBS Sports, executive producer for the network's coverage of the NFL on CBS and Super Bowl 53. Pregame coverage of Super Bowl 53 starts at 11:30 a.m. with Tops. It continues right through the Super Bowl today at 2 p.m., followed by the Super Bowl on CBS kickoff show at 6 p.m. and then Super Bowl 53 at 6:30 p.m. The chairman of CBS Sports is Sean McManus.
That is
Sean.
That is some promo, Mr. Rome.
It is good to see you, Sean. How are you?
I'm good. What a setup you have here.
I mean, I got to be ready when the boss comes around. You know that. This setup is absolutely beautiful. You know, coming to Radio Row every single year is great. Tracy Wolves and I were talking about this on the show earlier this week, but it does feel different when CBS is hosting because the entire family is here.
That's right.
What has the week been like for you?
You know, it kind of starts slowly on Monday with some meetings, and it starts to ramp up as you get to Friday and Saturday. A lot of meetings with the NFL, a lot of meetings with our producers on the rundowns for our shows. It's a hectic week, and it's a busy week. I'm at the point right now where I wish tomorrow was Sunday because we're ready to do the game. We've been talking about it for a year with our producers and on-air talent, so I'm ready to do the game. And you got to remember, with all this stuff around you and all these distractions, it's still a football game. The field, last I checked, is still 100 yards long. There's still 22 guys on the field at any one time. It's a football game. Let the game come to you and do it as you would a regular season game.
Sean McManus joining me on Radio Row. Sean, let me ask you about Tony Romo quickly. He's been an absolute rock star since he entered the booth. You told a story recently about how you first got the idea to hire him. You and David Burson were at an event that was before the Patriots-Seahawks Super Bowl. You had a conversation with Tony Romo. What do you remember about that conversation?
I remember talking to Jerry Jones, and Tony came up and introduced me to Jerry introduced me to Tony. I said, what do you think of the game? Just as kind of an innocuous, you know, conversation starter. And I got about 7 or 8 minutes on, here's what the Seattle defense needs to do to stop Tom Brady. Here's what Tom Brady, in eight minutes, he had broken down the entire game. And I said, well, that's really special. Said goodbye and turned to David Burson, my number two, and said, that's going to be our number one analyst one day. Huh. It was that that compelling, that enthusiastic, that I just thought he was it. And kept in contact with him every time that our team did a Dallas Cowboys game. The producer would come back and say, we did an interview with Tony. He's the real deal. So when he was trying to decide whether or not to retire at the Super Bowl at Houston a couple years ago, we sat down with him and tried to convince him that a career at CBS was the right thing for him to do. And fortunately, he said yes. And as you said, he's become a rock star. I wish people wouldn't continue to focus just on his predictions.
Because they're missing other good stuff, aren't
missing,
they?
Yeah, there are a lot of games this regular season. We didn't make one prediction, and his analysis was terrific. So I just wish they would not. But listen, it's cool stuff. And the fact that he did it three times in a row on the highest rated and most watched half hour on television other than the Super Bowl is pretty cool. But it's fun to work with him.
He is fun. Sean McManus joining us. He's the chairman of CBS Sports. In terms of the game itself, what are some of the storylines that interest you the most?
you know, it's the matchup we would have wanted. It's the you know, the dynasty, the likes of which I don't think we're ever going to see again. Quite frankly, this many AFC Championship games in a row, 10 Super Bowls. I don't think you're ever going to see that. So that obviously is a big storyline. Sean McVay and Jared Goff, great storylines. Also, you know, you got the young coach and the young quarterback going against a veteran coach and the veteran quarterback. That couldn't be better. Two really good running games. I mean, I think Sony Michel is going to be a star in this game. I really do. You got C.J. Anderson and Todd Gurley on the other side. So I think if we get a close game, which I hope we do, we could have one of the most compelling Super Bowls in a long, long time.
Sean McManus is my guest. Sean, we've got a couple of minutes left. I want to ask you, back in 1998, you led CBS Corporation's efforts to bring the NFL back to CBS.
Yep.
What do you remember about that time, and how significant was it for the company to be broadcasting NFL games once again?
I remember that when CBS lost the NFL, the network went from being the number one rated network to being the third rated network. We had lost a lot of our prestige. The sports division was, even though they had a lot of good events like the Masters and the Final Four, the sports division was kind of floundering, and it became evident that without the NFL, it's tough to have a fully-fledged operating television network. So I worked for a solid year with my number two, Tony Petitti, in figuring out a way to get the NFL back to CBS. It was, I always remember the day that we finally got it, and I got a signed piece of paper from Paul Tagliabue, who was the commissioner, brought it over to my office. I saw the signed piece of paper. It was surreal. I mean, I couldn't actually believe that we had the NFL back on CBS. So for me, when I look at my career, that's the most satisfying moment of my career, when I saw that piece of paper signed by Paul Tagliabue, know that we had gotten the NFL back. Then I immediately started putting a team together because we only had 9 months until our first game.
Sean McManus, my guest. He is the chairman of CBS Sports, and it's a very big day for the entire company. Once again, the Super Bowl today at 2 p.m. is followed by the Super Bowl on CBS kickoff show at 6 p.m. The Super Bowl itself is 6:30 p.m. on Sunday. Sean, thank you very much. And by the way, thanks for an amazing setup here. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you, Jim. You deserve it.
Good night.